This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. So far this week, Karl Rove is out as the president's political director. He plans to spend more time with his family. Thus far, he seems to be spending a lot of time with Rush Limbaugh. Surprising results in the Iowa straw poll. Not that Mitt Romney won, but who came in second? Hillary Clinton tells TV viewers in Iowa they're not invisible to her, while Barack Obama describes himself as the candidate best able to bring the country together, unlike that senator from New York. And two top Republicans plan to retire from Congress. Add it all up and you've got a mega edition of the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
Ken Rudin is back. He's NPR's political editor, writes the weekly Political Junkie column at NPR.org, and we'll get to your questions about Karl Rove, the president, and the election a bit later. So right now, if you have questions about the result of the straw poll in Iowa, who's still in and who's out, or any of the week's political news, give us a call. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk at NPR.org. And you can always weigh in on our blog. That's at NPR.org/blog of the nation. Ken also has an email challenge for you, and later in the hour, a guilty plea from the referee in the NBA gambling scandal and how fans will react to that news. But first, Ken Rudin and a jumbo-sized political junkie. Hey, Ken, welcome back from vacation.
Jumbo-sized Ken Rudin.
Yeah. What's the email challenge?
Well, Dennis Hastert is expected to announce on Friday that he will not run for re-election. The former Speaker of the House, the longest-serving Speaker of the House in history, but who was
the Republican Speaker? That was
longest-serving Republican Speaker in history, right, until the Democratic takeover of the House in 2006. But who was the last person to remain in the House after giving up the speakership?
And what does the successful emailer get for this?
They will host Talk of the Nation next week. No, they will get an actual campaign button from the Ken Rudin collection.
Ah, yes. Well, why don't we start with Iowa? Mitt Romney won the straw poll over the weekend, but that may not be the biggest news.
No, it's not big news at all, given the fact that John McCain, Rudy Giuliani, and Fred Thompson all boycotted the event. Mitt Romney has spent many months in Iowa, spent millions of dollars trying to get out the vote. But I think two things were interesting. One, 10,000 fewer people showed up this time than the last Republican straw poll event in 1999 when George W. Bush won fairly convincingly. Only 14,000 people showed up at Saturday's event in Ames, Iowa. And again, you know, depending on how you think it's really important or not, it does show a little indication of how you can get your organization to get out the troops. But the fact is that Mike Huckabee, the former governor of Arkansas, who spent very little money, actually he doesn't have much money. I think he's raised about $1 million so far compared to Romney's $44 million. But he finished a second place, and I think that was interesting. The fact is, Mike Huckabee is somebody we should be talking about a little more than we have been the last couple of months.
Nevertheless, Mitt Romney did as expected, and that does become important after a while.
I am delighted. I've tried losing, and I've tried winning, and I do like winning better.
And even if you're expected to win, it's nice to win.
And absolutely. And he also makes the case that, look, if Giuliani, McCain, and Fred Thompson thought they would win, then maybe they would have participated. But really, Romney, it wasn't a fixed deck, a stacked deck. But the fact is that Romney really went after this. And I've said for quite a while now that I think Mitt Romney will be the Republican nominee. He, you know, there's a lot of time left to go, and, you know, I've been wrong in so many times, so many predictions in the past, but he just seems to be, the way that the playing field is right now, Romney just seems to be even though in the national polls you see Giuliani with a big lead, but in the early polls, Iowa, New Hampshire, perhaps South Carolina, if Romney does really well there, he could go all the way.
Mm-hmm. And for those of us in the political watching business, it was nice to have actual votes, though the Iowa straw poll is a little strange, but better than the thin gruel of chewing over opinion polls over the past 6 months.
That's true, but we are talking, Romney got 4,576 votes. Again, 4,576 does not a front runner make, but again, it was the only game in town, and he won it.
The front runner on the Democratic side in Iowa, well, that depends on who you're listening to. And one of the favorites just started running her first TV ads in that state.
As I travel around America, I hear from so many people who feel like they're just invisible to their government.
Hillary Clinton has spent her life standing up for people others don't see.
You know, know, if you're a family that is struggling and you don't have health care, well, you are invisible to this president. If you're a single mom trying to find affordable child care so you can go to work, well, you're invisible too. And I never thought I would see that our soldiers who serve in Iraq and Afghanistan would be treated as though they were invisible as well.
Hillary Clinton's ad now running in Iowa. Is it interesting that various candidates have been running commercials in that state for quite a while now? One of the best-funded candidates, Hillary Clinton, has waited this long to get in.
True, but what's interesting about this ad to me is that she took on the Republican administration, the 6-7 years of the Bush administration, whereas Barack Obama, there's a front-page interview today in the Washington Post where Barack Obama went after Hillary Clinton. There was a quote the other day from Elizabeth Edwards, the wife of John Edwards, who, and she went after Barack Obama, who said he's holier than thou on the Iraqi war. So while everybody else seems to be just, you know, battling among themselves for the Democratic nomination, Hillary Clinton almost is looking beyond the fight for the nomination and looking on to the general election. I think that's pretty interesting.
And we have yet to learn the actual dates of when the Iowa caucuses are going to be held, or for that matter, the New Hampshire primary. But it does begin to look like everything is going to be in 2008.
It does, but earlier than we expected, given the fact that South Carolina has now moved up its nomination primary, and then we expect New Hampshire perhaps could move up as early as perhaps maybe January 8th. That's the earliest in history. The Iowa Governor Chet Culver said that there's no law that says we have to move it back into 2007. But again, it's certainly earlier than ever. And then it hurts. I think that ultimately hurts candidates who might still talk about getting in. Newt Gingrich keeps talking about it. Fred Thompson looks like he's going to get in September. But Gingrich, you know, again, earlier than ever means you have to be on the ground earlier than ever. And a lot of these not yet candidates look like they may have just, you know, passed it by.
One thing we did expect from the Iowa straw poll was that it would might convince some of the Republican also-rans that maybe not this year, as 08 is not their time. One former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson decided to bow out.
Right, as one Thompson is preparing to get in, the other one is out. Tommy Thompson has spent all his time, all his money in Iowa. He said if he does not finish in the first two slots, he's gone, and he finished in the sixth place. You know, a lot of people talk about that the media should get rid of some of these candidates, that the debates are so crowded. But again, this is exactly the way it should be. It should be go out, test your case, talk to the voters, and if you're not getting a good response from the voters, then you make the decision to leave. Jim Gilmore left earlier, now Tommy Thompson.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. Ken Rudin's our guest, our political junkie. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. We're going to get to Karl Rove a little bit later, but let's turn now to Tim. Tim's with us from Mount Holly in North Carolina.
Hi. My question is, does it not seem a little strange that Elizabeth Edwards does John Edwards attacking? And, you know, why can't he speak for himself? Because I'm from North Carolina, and I find that disconcerting.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Edwards quoted, as Ken mentioned a minute ago, describing Barack Obama as holier than thou. Ken?
Well, and she also criticized Hillary Clinton about, you know, whether she's running as a woman or is a woman or whatever mm-hmm. it was. She didn't say anything about cleavage, which was fortunate. But what I think is interesting is that Elizabeth Edwards is a very outspoken woman. It's not that for all the discussions about her illness and about her health and about the future of the Edwards candidacy, Elizabeth Edwards has been very strong from the outset. She was strong in his John Edwards' 98 run for the Senate in North Carolina, strong in his 2004 vice presidential campaign. She's a very outspoken woman, and nothing's going to stop her. She doesn't speak for John Edwards. John Edwards has been doing fine, thank you very much about that, but there's nothing that has ever certainly able to keep her from speaking her mind.
And indeed, John Edwards had to explain why his view on gay marriage was different from his wife's.
That's right, exactly.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Tim.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to Rodney. Rodney's with us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
My question was, did you see the Meet the Press interview this past weekend with Congressman Ford?
No, it's Harold Ford, who's the head of the Democratic Leadership Coalition.
Council, right.
Council, excuse me. Right. And he was on with
Martin O'Malley, the governor they had an op-ed with Martin O'Malley, the governor of...
No, but he was on with Daily Kos talking about the future of the Democratic Party,
right.
And was the future the sort of centrist direction of the DLC. And Kos was arguing that, indeed, the party is moving considerably to the left, and leaders like Harold Ford were behind the curve. Is that what you're getting at, Rodney?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just felt like that was the hottest debate yet this year,
mm-hmm.
because I think that's where the real fire is with this whole election right now, is where the country is moving. And one was saying to the left, which is speaking to the truth and directly to where Americans feel, you know, what's important right now, and speaking to them directly, and others with the establishment and, you know, business as usual. And it seemed to me that Congressman Ford really lost that debate. And just at the end, just looking at the expression on his face.
This week's edition of The Economist magazine, their cover is America Turning Left. Ken?
But certainly the Democratic Party is, and obviously we saw that in the 2006 elections, but the war is helping drive that as well. It's one thing for Harold Ford Jr. and the DLC to talk about, well, Bill Clinton, you know, did a great job in winning the election in 1992 and 1996. Well, that was a lifetime ago, and we saw the fact that the DLC had its annual conference not too long ago, and not a single presidential candidate showed up, whereas at the yearly Kos convention, they couldn't stop the candidates from coming. So clearly, if you're looking for an ideological move, a switch, a shift in the Democratic Party, is certainly to the left and away from the DLC.
Just to point out, the yearly Kos convention will be the Netroots convention as of next year, and I'm sure even more important than it was this year. Rodney, thanks very much for the call.
One last comment.
Quickly, if you would.
My prediction is Hillary Clinton is representative of that debate with Harold Ford, and that Barack Obama is representative of the one who won the debate.
All right. Thanks very much for your thoughts.
Neil, actually, that's a very interesting point, because Hillary Clinton has been criticized by the left wing of the Democratic Party all year for the fact that she voted for the war, still called for more and more troops, and yet she's not paying the price that one might think for somebody who had those positions
mm-hmm.
in the past.
Interesting. Ken Rudin is here. It's a giant-sized edition of The Political Junkie. Up next, Karl Rove's political future and the results of Ken's email challenge, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. If you want to reply to that email challenge, talk@npr.org. And we'll be back. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and Ken Rudin, our political junkie, has an email challenge for you all. Who was the last Republican Speaker of the House to stay on? Last Speaker of the House to stay on after he was losing
the speakership.
The speakership.
That's
and we've gotten a couple of email answers. This from Courtney in Tucson, Arizona. Ken Rudin's answer may be Trent Lott, United States Senator. He was, of course, Majority Leader of the Senate and stayed on in the Senate.
Right, but he was never Speaker of the House, even though he was Majority Whip of the House before he was elected to the Senate. The answer is not Trent Lott.
Okay. Send us an email response, talk@npr.org. Of course, the big political news this week is Karl Rove's announcement that he'll step down as President Bush's political advisor. Even Rove's worst critics acknowledge he has an impressive record in elections, with one exception, 2006, when he predicted a Republican congressional majority in an interview with NPR's Robert Siegel.
But you've seen the DeWine race and the Santorum race. And I don't want to...
Yeah, look. I'm looking at all of these, Robert, and adding them up, and I add up to a Republican Senate and a Republican House.
Okay.
You may end up with a different math, but you're entitled to your math. I'm entitled to the math.
And it turned out, of course, that Robert's math was a little better than Carl's. But Ken Rudin's with us. He's NPR political editor, our political junkie. If you have questions about Karl Rove, the president, and the election, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Karl Rove and President Bush go all the way back to their days together in Texas. Rove helped elect Bush governor of that state, and Wayne Slater has covered their rise to the White House. He's senior political writer for the Dallas Morning News, co-author of Bush's Brain, How Karl Rove Made George W. Bush Presidential. He joins us from a studio at the production block in Austin, Texas. Nice to have you on the program today.
Great to be with you.
And Rove plans to leave the White House, I guess, officially at the end of the month, though he's already back in Texas.
Yeah, he actually is. He's back in Texas with the president, talking to Rush Limbaugh today. I don't know that he's seen his wife and his son yet, which is said was his ostensible reason for leaving.
Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, he's spending more time with Rush Limbaugh than he is with his family.
Right.
Is he likely to find a job in the upcoming campaign, do you think?
You know, he's going to be involved. Karl Rove is not going away. So Democrats who think that may be a possibility ought to be dissuaded of that notion. Now, it's unlikely, though, that Karl is going to be involved directly, formally, with any presidential campaign, in part because none of these guys want him around, not formally, not actively a part of the campaign. So despite some rumors to the contrary, it's not likely he will attach himself to a specific candidate, but he's there to provide guidance. He's there to provide advice. And I think he'll do it, in effect, informally with whoever the nominee is, and also through the Republican National Committee. He's going to be a player here. The kinds of comments he's made about Hillary Clinton in the last couple of days are the kinds of comments you're going to hear about the eventual nominee, who presumably will be Hillary Clinton, in the months ahead.
Well, whom he presumes will be Hillary Clinton anyway.
That's right.
I guess at least he hopes so. And he gave also an interview to the Politico, in which case he said he thinks that the Democrats are making an historical mistake, the same mistake they made back in the 1970s.
I think he means that, but I'm never sure with Karl. He's one of these guys who really is, don't throw me in the briar patch. And what he really wants when he says he wants Hillary Clinton or thinks that Hillary Clinton will be a strategic or flawed candidate is that he fears she may not be a flawed candidate and may be the candidate he wants the least. You never know with Karl.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get a caller in on the line. This is Andrew. Andrew's with us from South Bend in Indiana.
How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good. My question is basically, you know, Karl Rove is a different kind of guy. He's had a bigger presence as, you know, someone who's a, you know, a campaign manager turning into a political advisor than anyone else that I can think of in recent history. What do you think the American people will remember about Karl Rove? Is it going to be 2000, 2004, or is the 2006 taint going to stick with him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I really think it's unfair to criticize Karl exclusively because of the Republican debacle in 2006. Here's a guy who brought George Bush around, a guy who had never held public office, encouraged him, cultivated him, and then ran his campaign, a successful campaign for governor, re-election for governor, and back-to-back wins for the White House. That is an enormous achievement. As well as the achievement of the 2002 Republican victories in the midterm elections. So
Right. That's
something I think people ought to remember. He is an extraordinary political operative. But events conspired against him, and in some cases, because of his own mistakes, I think, and misjudgments. And in 2006, I think part of the architecture of the political approach, his model to win, that it's a divide people, to focus on wedge issues, to really motivate the base. This model that he chose for 2004, which he pressed in 2006, really collapsed in on itself and showed the limitations. I think he will be remembered as someone who was an extraordinary political tactician. But once he got to the White House and got involved in policy, we realized that the politics that gets you there may make the governing impossible.
And that's a point that several Republicans have made, and some Democrats have not been hesitant to point that out as well. James Carville says, yes, a very successful political tactician, but you can't forget his role as, you know, deputy chief of staff at the White House, his role in the Valerie Plame affair, the dismissal of the federal prosecutors, and various other problems that are cropping up now.
Yeah, and I kid about this. I say to the caller, I can't tell whether you're a Karl supporter or an opponent or just an independent in this matter, agnostic in this matter. But, he appears at this moment to be on the edge of achieving that one thing that in recent years is an accomplishment for people inside the Beltway. He leaves office unindicted, at least so far.
Yeah, well, let's hope not. I am a liberal, and I've got my fingers crossed that Al Gore is going to jump into this race.
All right. Well,
But I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Andrew. Is Karl Rove, as you know, a personality? I mean, you said it's unlikely that any Republican candidate's going to sign him up. For one thing, they've already got advisors. But is he toxic at this point? Is he worth negative points to a Republican candidate?
I'm not sure that's true. I know that Democrats will say that. Frankly, the Republicans I talk to in Washington and some of the folks who have known Carl, as I have for 20 years back here in Texas, think that he really is a fount of awfully good political advice. 2006 aside, when we're talking about winning and mounting campaigns, he's a guy that if I were a nominee of a party or a candidate seeking office, congressional campaigns, Senate campaigns, or the presidency in 2008, I would want to listen to him.
Yet that approach, you know, reinforce your base, play to your base. This is a great plan as long as your base is one vote bigger than the other guy's base.
That is the heart of it. And that is the fatal flaw of the Rovian model, basically of dividing, of conquering, of putting together 50% plus one. The moment that you lose anyone in your constituency, the moment that some business conservatives who are part of your winning coalition say, hey, wait a minute, why is the budget so big? The moment that some Christian conservatives who are a fundamental part of that say, we never got the gay marriage amendment. What the heck's going on here? The moment that the security moms in the suburbs who were so important in the reelection race in voting for a guy who would stand firm and strong against the bad guy in the Middle East and the terrorists, the moment those people begin to fall away, you didn't have to lose many, but the moment you lost a few, you lost the race.
Let's get Gwen on the line. Gwen's calling us from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Hi. One scary scenario that I can imagine is Rove plus Romney, being from Massachusetts and knowing what Romney did and how little time he spent here and how the state he left us in. But my question is, I wonder if Mr. Slater could remind people of how the Bushes found Rove originally when he was in trouble with the Republican National, the National Committee.
Yes.
He was a young Republican in college.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Wayne Slater.
That's right. Just briefly, basically, Rove was elected the president of college Republicans. His campaign manager in the South was a young college student named Lee Atwater. And they ran basically a successful campaign. And part of the problem was this back in 1972, was the emergence of the Watergate scandal. It came to be known that Rove, Atwater, and others had taught dirty tricks campaigns to young college Republicans, going through the garbage of your opponent, putting together fake brochures, and doing other various dirty tricks to go after a campaign. Now, normally, in another environment, people might think, well, heck, that's just college pranksterism. But not in 1972 and 1973. That was at the heart of Watergate. College Republicans were an official arm of the Republican National Committee. The head of the Republican National Committee promised to investigate. That happened to be George Herbert Walker Bush. He investigated for a week or two, declared that Carl had done nothing wrong, then he hired him. And that was the beginning of the Rove Bush Family Association.
Thank you. I think that's very representative.
Okay, Gwen, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks.
Hi, it's Ken Rudin here. John Weaver, McCain's guy, said that Karl Rove got more credit and more blame than was deserving. Do you agree with that?
Ken, you know that's true. And I've probably been criticized in part in a very minor way, us in the media who've tried to build him up as the great Svengali, the extraordinary Machiavellian genius and omnipotent political force. He isn't responsible for everything. He doesn't deserve the credit for all the good stuff. He wasn't at fault for all the failures in the end. But I got to tell you, Ken, on the big decisions that have been made, whether they are about how to market the war or the domestic policy initiatives of this administration from day one, Carl was in the center of it, and so he bears some responsibility.
From what you know of him, there's a talk that he will write a book about his years in the White House and his years with the president. Is he likely to spill, and is this going to be a tell-all book?
No tell-all. Let me tell you, Carl will be the most loyal of the loyalists. But unlike, I think, some of the other books from loyalists that are kind of bland and maybe not that interesting, Carl sees himself in this role as strategic and very important. He's an historian. He sees himself as a national, as an amateur historian. He sees this as an important role. He sees himself now as the official explainer-in-chief of this administration, who will go forth and in a book or books, as well as some speeches, try to redefine, to explain, or as critics might say, to resurrect the Bush years in history. He knows more than anyone, or as much as anyone, that the historians will begin to pile on books that examine and define this administration, which at the moment doesn't look very good, and that Rove wants to make sure that his side, the president's side, is articulated in that historical debate as quickly and as clearly and as passionately as possible.
Wayne Slater, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you, too.
Wayne Slater, senior political writer for the Dallas Morning News, co-author of the book The Architect, Karl Rove and the Dream of Absolute Power. He joined us today from the studios in Austin, Texas. And we have some more email responses to Ken's email challenge, and that was the Speaker of the House who stayed on in the House after losing the speakership, the most recent one. Tip O'Neill, that from Rob via email?
No, Tip O'Neill retired in 1986.
Is the answer, asks Julia from Encino, Sam Rayburn.
No, Sam Rayburn died in office in 1961. He was still Speaker when he died.
Elizabeth, via email, Newt Gingrich.
No, Newt Gingrich was Speaker. Then he resigned his seat in the end of 1998 after the Republican defeat in 98. And that's what I ultimately led to the Dennis Hastert ascension. But the answer is not Newt Gingrich.
Jeremy in Miami, Tom DeLay stepped down as Speaker before actually leaving the House.
No, Tom DeLay was never Speaker of the House. He was House Majority Leader.
Eric, via email, Jim Wright stayed on as Speaker?
Nope. Jim Wright resigned in the middle of a scandal in 1989. He resigned as Speaker in the middle when he was caught in the scandal.
And Joan in Plymouth, Minnesota, the last Speaker to remain in the House after losing the gavel was Representative Joseph Martin, Republican of Massachusetts in the 1950s, but he stayed in leadership to become Minority Leader.
Ding, 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 ding. Joseph Martin is the correct answer.
Joan from Plymouth, Minnesota will get, I'm sure, an invaluable campaign button from Ken
Williams'
collection,
wants it or
whether
not.
She wants it or not. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we mentioned just a few moments ago that Denny Hastert, the former Speaker of the House, is leaving. Here's an email question from Lori in New York City. Do you think Democrats can pick up Dennis Hastert's seat? And let me throw in there, Ray LaHood from not far down the road in Peoria is also leaving, another senior Republican. Are those two seats in play now?
Well, they are, of course. I think in some ways it's worse news for the Republican Party that Ray LaHood is leaving, because Dennis Hastert never was expected to stay on once he, you know, lost his speakership. He didn't even stay in the leadership. He could have run for minority leader, but he didn't do that, and that's John Boehner of Ohio. But the Democrats have been on the ascension in Illinois. They took the governorship in 2002 for the first time in like 30 years. They were reelected in 2002. Democrats are making clear gains. They did much better against Hastert in 2006 than they did in previous elections. I think the Republicans keep the seat, but it's one more seat, and with LaHood, two more seats that the Republicans now have to defend.
And there are a couple of, well, I guess gaffes is not too strong a word, that are coming out the last week or so. This from the front runner in the national campaigns for the Republican side. This from Rudy Giuliani.
This is not a mayor or a governor or a president who is sitting in an ivory tower. I was at Ground Zero as often, if not more than most of the workers. I was there working with them. I was there guiding things. I was there bringing people there. But I was exposed to exactly the same things they were exposed to. So in that sense, I'm one of them.
Rudy Giuliani saying he suffered as much as any of the workers at Ground Zero, caused some considerable resentment from firefighters and police in New York.
Well, even if he had not said that, there's a lot of resentment from some families who lost loved ones in the 9/11 tragedy, that Giuliani is claiming far more credit than he deserved, and the fact that he almost glossed over the recovery efforts that more of the families wanted to pursue after 9/11. But I guess an unfortunate thing for Giuliani to say. It could have been a slip of the tongue, and I don't want to defend him or criticize him, but it's not the kind of thing that you hear that goes easy on the ears.
And the campaign of Democratic Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico, he was forced to make a clarification after the Democratic Forum that was sponsored by a gay rights organization. In answer to a question about homosexuality, he said it was a choice and not biological, and later said he misunderstood the question.
Yeah, well, Bill Richardson has made some clarifications of his. Remember, once upon a time, he was a top draft pick for the baseball Kansas City A's, and of course, that never happened. Richardson has done a lot of backtracking over the year. But again, you know, he sent out an email today saying, "Is Karl Rove gone?" No, he's not really gone. He's one of the many Democrats who would love to have Karl Rove stay around, be kicked around even longer, because I guess it helps the Democratic Party.
Ken Rudin, welcome back from vacation.
Thanks so much.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor and our political junkie every Wednesday. You can read his column and listen to his podcast at npr.org. Coming up, gambling, guilty pleas, and the NBA referee. What's the fallout from the scandal, and do you care? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or you can email us, talk@npr.org. Alan Schwartz of the New York Times will join us next. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.